Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Happy Friday. Titans taking on the Atlanta Falcons in just a couple of days. Back in action. D-Mace, Willie D, how are we doing today?
Doing pretty good. It's we talked so much about the Titans this week, but we haven't really talked about their opponent at all.
Talked about the drama.
Exactly.
And the future.
Exactly.
We haven't even really talked about the fact that the quarterback that they traded up to pick in the second round is going to be starting
yes.
on Sunday.
I guess that's what happens when you have so much other drama going on within your building that you can't even really talk about really the two most important things at this present moment: the starting quarterback, which is your rookie, and the game you got coming up against your former OC. I mean, boy, oh boy. I don't think when we talked about this yesterday, Willie, I don't think we've ever, it's been a long time since we had a week like this where you're not focusing in on a game, but you're focusing in on the surroundings, of the game and not necessarily the game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's going to be some drama, I think. And, you know, they have played two really good games in their stadium. Mm-hmm. So they're going to hope to cling to that a little bit. I'm curious how they looked in terms of being unified, win or lose. You know, do they look like they're everybody pulling the rope, you know, look together? Remember, there was the comments. They just didn't feel like they were playing on the same page a lot the last time they took the field in London. So that's been, seems like a long time ago. A lot has happened since then. But
life comes at you.
It's going to be really intriguing. Really intriguing. It's going to be a heck of a sports weekend. You get the Maple Leafs coming into town. I watched them play last night. They are an elite team. It's going to take everything the Predators have to beat them tomorrow. So you're going to have some people Saturday night in Smashville and then Sunday at noon across the river. That's going to be a fun sports weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Going to be a great weekend here. But we talked a lot about the importance of this Atlanta game, a lot after the Titans lost to the Ravens in London, of how much was riding on this game, how the direction of the franchise could completely change but based off of that game. But I think a lot of that conversation may have shifted when Kevin Byard was traded. So do we still feel the same way? Do we still feel like this is a pivotal game for the Tennessee Titans? Or is their mind made up already?
I think it's, you know, I think this would have been a critical game regardless if they chose to make these moves or not. Because I think with what's going on in the division, I don't think anyone thought that Indianapolis and Houston would be essentially in the race to win the division. I think they looked at those two teams as teams that, yeah, they would play tough, but ultimately, you know, they would be the bottom of the AFC South. But as we see, you know, Jacksonville obviously is at top, Indy second, I think, and then Houston and then the Titans. You know, so it's like flipped on upside on, you know, on its head. So I thought this game was critical either way before the move to send Beyer to Philadelphia and potentially some more moves. But now it's even more critical for this team to pick up a victory, because to me, if you don't, you might as well, you know, when you walk back up and when you walk into that locker room Monday, you ain't safe. You are not safe. Any player other than a few of the young players, everybody else, you're not safe.
The way I look at it is when you only play 17 games, mm-hmm. every game is big, right? Just for every individual's career, every team's direction. I do think the direction of the team is a little different now. It's a little more of a long-term view, mm-hmm. and that's okay. That's, I think, what needs to happen. I think that's a smart move. And it is going to challenge, I think, the urgency of the guys playing. They're going to have to fight through the fact that their defensive captain was traded, right? Their leader. I think that's the way that everybody has looked from the outside and the inside. The leader of the defense is Beyer. The leader of the offense is Henry, right? And they traded. Mm-hmm. They traded one of them. You got to get over that. And that's not easy to do, but that's the test. That's what I think everybody's looking for. But as Mike Vrabel said, you're trying to thread the needle as best you can, right? You're doing what you need to do for the good of the franchise. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you're not trying to win. And so that's what they're going to try to walk, that tightrope, which is not easy. Because if they just mail it in and get smoked, what's everybody going to say? Well, they traded their captain. What did you expect?
Right.
You know, they threw the other quarterback in there. They threw him to the wolf. You know, there's going to be a lot of that, right? But I think that's what you're trying to fight through, is see how competitive you can be. What can you do to compete? It's not a great team you're playing. It's a team that is going to have – they're feeling pressure to win mm-hmm. for the first time in a while, the Falcons, right? They haven't been relevant in a few years. They've gone through a rebuild.
And they have an opportunity to win – a pretty bad division. I mean, they're first place in the division right now.
This is a big game for them.
It is a big game for them, because they could go 9-8 and still win that division, but you got to win 9 games first.
Yeah.
And I think Atlanta has good pieces. I think Atlanta has a good defense. Mm-hmm. Atlanta has a good to great run game. I mean, Bijan Robinson. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into your film breakdown of the Atlanta Falcons, but geez Louise, when Bijan Robinson doesn't have the flu, he's nearly unstoppable. It's Desmond Ridder that is a liability to this football team. But I know, I don't know. I can speculate mm-hmm. that this one means a lot for Arthur Smith.
I'm sure it does. This is a guy that, you know, he was with this organization for a very long time. And he sort of slowly just worked his way up to be an offensive coordinator. And then you saw the brilliance in his play calling. It wasn't like a McVay or Shanahan or, you know, one of these other, or McDaniel. It was done in a different fashion. It merged the old with the new, but still was innovative in what they did, you know, largely because they had Derrick Henry in the backfield. But, you know, once he found his groove, meaning Arthur Smith, once he identified all of his playmakers, you saw that offense really start to go. And you see some of that. If you watch their offense, it looks eerily like the Tennessee Titans offense when he was here. You look at obviously they got Jonnu Smith. They had him here. They got him there.
Is Firkser still in Atlanta?
I don't think Firkser is still in Atlanta. Then they got Kyle Pitts. They got Drake London.
Bijan
Robinson. Yes. And this team, they are just a sound football team. And like Willie said, I think this, too, for them is a – is it a must win? Yes, in the sense of they're already a game, you know, up on their division. You know, yeah, they're a game up on the division because they're 2-0 in their division, and everyone else is either 1-1 or 0-2. So they are a game up on the next opponent, which is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So they want to get a victory to keep that going. And what better way, I'm sure in their minds, is to go come here to Nashville and get Arthur Smith his victory, his first time back in this building in a regular season.
I'm glad you brought that up. The idea of this being a must-win game. And I'll be completely honest with you, I don't like using that term. Mm-hmm. I think it's overused, and I think calling a game a must-win game, like 9 times out of 10, it's overly dramatic. Like, a must-win game is a playoff game. Like, mm-hmm. you win it, and you advance, you lose, and you go home. So I think that must-win is thrown around too much. Mm-hmm. But I'll ask you guys, is this a must-win game?
Well, I'll throw it back this way. Uh-huh. Can you have a must-win when you are in now the mode that I think that they're in? Mm-hmm. Is it a little bit more about the long-term picture, the process, more than what happens on Sunday? I would kind of lean that way. And so I would lean not one must-win. But if you're trying to do both, you're trying to have it all, mm-hmm. then, you know, you probably need this one.
Well, I think it's a must-win from this standpoint, you know, because we're just looking at the Tennessee Titans. I think it's a must-win from this standpoint. Is it a must-win for Vrabel?
Yeah.
No. I don't think it's a must-win for Vrabel, because if it's a must-win for Vrabel, that means his seat is getting warm a little bit. And I don't know if it's getting warm yet. I think, you know, next year will be the year. Now, again, Amy can throw a monkey wrench in the whole plan. She's did it before, and we've seen it. But I think next season is the season that, listen, we got to win or we're changing this thing up. So I don't think it's necessarily a must-win for Vrabel. I think it's a must-win for those guys that want to remain here as Tennessee Titans. Guys that want their job. It's a must-win for them, because if they don't win this game, guys are gone. Guys are going to get traded, potentially. Or guys are going to get eventually released at the end of the season. So, to me, they have to almost go into this game as, listen, we got to make sure we have every, you know, I dotted and T crossed, you know, as players. Because the last thing you want to do as a player is, after all this stuff, you know, buyer getting traded, now all this stuff coming in, we don't know who else, to go out there and go flat. You don't want that to happen, because then what people think, oh, it was because the buyer got traded and all this other stuff. I'm telling players, when we're on the field, we don't think about that stuff. When we get on the field, we don't think about that stuff. It's like, man, we gotta concentrate on the task at hand. I can't worry. It would be great to have Byard, yes, but I can't worry about not having Byard. I gotta trust the guy that they brought in here to be his replacement. So maybe after the game, yes, but during the game, things are moving so fast, you don't have time to think about it.
Question for you: last season, you know, Amy Adams Drunk fired John Robinson. Mm-hmm. And then the next week, the Titans lost to the Jags. And at that point in the season, the Jags were still considered the crummy, crappy Jags. Mm-hmm. I think Derrick Henry ran for like 200 yards in the first half, mm-hmm. and then they didn't really use him much in the second half. Long story short,
they self-destructed. They turned it over a ton of times mm-hmm. in that
yeah.
game.
Titans end up losing.
Completely
that
screwed up the end of the first half.
Right.
I mean, they had a bad turnover. An interception by Tannehill. They just did not play well in that game at all.
It was a game they should have won, and they didn't.
I don't know about should have won, because they got beat bad. I mean, I don't. They were not in position to win in the second half. But at the time, they needed to win.
Going into that game, at that point, the Jags didn't look like a very good team. That I consider going into the game a game that they should have won, especially a divisional game. Mm-hmm. But I looked at that, and I couldn't help but think, is this team distracted by John Robinson getting fired? Like, I know that they
that
are going to go
question
out there.
That was a major question.
Right.
That was being asked back then, for sure.
And I know that they're going to go out there and try to win the game, and they're mm-hmm. not going to try and let a Kevin Byard trade, you know, be in their minds when they're playing a game. But it's not just a Kevin Byard trade. It's a discussion of what's going on with this football program. Who could be the next domino to fall? Mm-hmm. Who is safe? I have to think that might be hanging over their heads just a little bit, just like I thought the John Robinson firing maybe had been yeah. hanging over their heads.
And that was a bombshell that nobody saw coming.
Totally.
I mean, as bad as it looked in Philadelphia, I don't think anybody saw that coming. That was a shocker.
I'm going to tell y'all a secret. Yeah. Players didn't care about it. Again, once they got on the field, this game.
I had to go
back and look. At halftime, it was 20-14. Still a game.
Yeah,
Tennessee Titans were down 6 points. Actually, they were up 14-13, and then
yeah, they had a great start.
Exactly, and then Jacksonville came back and took the lead right before half. This was a game after halftime. After halftime, the Titans did what they usually in the past would do: play a great first half and then come out the second half and totally flat. That's what they were. They turned the ball over. They did just about everything to lose that game. And in the player's mind and in Vrabel's mind, it ain't about John Robinson. That's the easy go to. It's low hanging fruit, and I get it. I understand why. But when you ask players, they're going to tell you, we weren't thinking about John Robinson and him because he doesn't affect what we do on the field. Now, had they fired the head coach, then that's something, because now everything changed as far as, you know, hierarchies and everything else. That changes. So that does directly affect the team in that week and on the field. But when your GM gets fired, that doesn't affect what we do on the field at all. This team did what they usually do. They reverted back to the old Tennessee Titans, you know, where they play a great first half and then they come out the second half and they basically sleepwalk the whole game. And that's what they did. So to me, this game, just for the purposes of guys saying, like Simmons said, who wants to be here? Show me who wants to be here. This is that game. Show me if you want to be here or not. Show me if you want to play for this team or not. I see it. I feel it. Vrabel will see it. Vrabel will feel it. Or are you worried about potentially getting traded, you know, come Monday? Which one is it? Because you can't do both. You can't think about being traded and play a good game. You either got to put that in the back of your mind and go out there and do the job that is tasked of you to do, or you're going to think about it and you're going to mess up the whole game and we're going to end up getting blown out. So we're either going to do one or the other. But I don't think the firing of John Robinson last year had anything to do with the players on the field. We don't give a damn. We don't. You know, as close as John Robinson was with the players, like he would come down, talk to them all the time. He got fired. Okay, we don't like it, but okay, we still got to go out and do our job. It's not like a player, you know. But then again, even with Byard, it's like, man, we miss him. But man, we got a job to do. So this is a game to me. Prove you want to be here, like yeah. Jeffrey Simmons said. Prove you want to be here. That's why I think it's a must win in regards to the players. Not necessarily, you know, for Vrabel's job. I think he's going to be here. It would be a bad decision if she fired, you know, Vrabel anytime in the near future.
I also thought it was a bad decision to fire John Robinson,
yeah.
Period, and especially when she did. But I would agree with you, D-Mace, that I would be shocked, floored, absolutely awestruck if Amy Adams Strunk decided to do anything with Mike Vrabel now or in the offseason. But Willie says not a must win. D-Mace, do you say must win?
Yeah, but the caveat is it's a must win because of the players and what the optics will look like for them. You know, you want to keep your job. You want to be here, like Jeffrey Simmons said. Well, go out there and prove you want to be here.
I think I lean toward Willie.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because I would have said pre-Kevin Byard trade, absolutely that this is a must win. Because if they hadn't made any trades or any moves leading up to this game, then I would have maybe had the idea of how much does this game have weight in their future decisions. Mm-hmm. And that if they lost this game, maybe at 2-5, you'd be more willing to sell than you would at 3-4. 3-4 is still not great, much better than 2-5. But they did make the decision to trade Kevin Byard. So now it leads me to believe that this franchise, this organization, looks at this game and says, yeah, like we'd like to win this game, but we are not going to put all of the weight of our future on a win or a loss here. I'd love for them to win this football game again, because 3-4 feels much more palatable than 2-5. 3-4 can make you think, okay,
we
got a chance. We beat a good Atlanta team. We feel confidence at home, and we've got some tough games at home that we feel like we can win. I mean, you still don't feel great about the team, but it's at least a little bit more optimism than a loss. But I cannot call it a must win, because it looks like this front office already has their mind made up that if they can sell, they will sell, win or loss.
I mean, you and Willie are not wrong from that respect. It seems like they've sort of, okay, we traded away Byard. That was the first domino to sort of fall. Now, you know, if teams, you know, give us the right compensation coming back, then we'd be willing to trade some other guys. But I'm just saying it's a must win for the players that claim they want to be here. You know, like Jeffrey Simmons said, either you're going to show us you want to be here or not. you know, this is your chance. If you say you, you know, the Titan way and you're all about, you know, what we do in this locker room, then show it on the field. But in regards to what y'all saying, yeah, you know, it is in a sense.
I don't like that the trade deadline is this early where you really have to make a call when you have so many games left and a lot of things could happen, but you're forced to do that. And I keep coming back to, if you're sitting in that office and you're being honest and you're having your – and you're looking at your draft next year, you're looking at your salary cap next year, you're looking at your roster, and you're saying, okay, where is our roster in the coming years? Got a lot of holes, a lot of things that a championship team needs that they don't have right now. They've got an aging quarterback, an aging running back. They've just traded their safety. You're looking at a new era. And you're weighing that with, can this team win 8 out of the last 11, which is the minimum you're going to need to win to get into the playoffs. The minimum.
On the road in Pittsburgh.
You go down the list. Can they win 8 out of 11 with this group, where Tannehill is now health-wise, where everything – I think
– I would lean no.
Well, I think that's – if you're being honest, right? Now, you can sit there and rah-rah and say, I'm not giving up on the season, which some people have done. But real, you got to be realistic at some point.
Man.
And I wish I could do that after 10 games. Right? And not after 6 games or 7 games.
Look at the Minnesota Vikings. They started the season 1-4. And then they went out on Monday Night Football and they beat the San Francisco 49ers, who I think are a Super Bowl contender. And Kirk Cousins was unstoppable
Stuff
in that
happens,
game. So now they're sitting at 3-4. Again, not a great record, but you just beat the 49ers. Anything can happen. Weird things happen in the National Football
Without
League.
Justin Jefferson.
Without Justin Jefferson. And Jordan Addison looked like a
rock
star.
He looked like the second coming of Justin Jefferson.
Seriously. So I would agree with you, really, that the NFL trade deadline, it does feel early. It feels like you have to make rash decisions based off of the first few games in the season, when we know the last 7, 8, 9, 10 games of the year could dictate your entire season. Jags, for example, the Jags didn't look very good in the beginning of the first half of the season last year.
Yeah, and then they picked it up.
They won the games they needed to win. The Titans lost 7 straight.
They were losing a lot of close games. They were dominating. No, I shouldn't say dominating. They were winning statistically in a lot of games that they lost by a razor's edge. So you wondered, what's going on there? And then all of a sudden, their quarterback started to figure it out. Their talent started to come through. They started winning the close games. And now I think they're at another level. To me, I think the Jaguars are a much different team now. They're further along than they were. They've continued to move forward.
They experienced a breakthrough at one point in the season last year after the trade deadline. And I know that was a different perspective. It was a young team. It was a building team.
It was time for them to start winning.
Right. Yeah. Versus this Titans team that's an old team that's looking at a rebuild here in the near future, maybe nearer than we expected. So different perspectives there. But yeah, I mean, anything can happen in the NFL. Crazy things can happen. But you have to make those big decisions, those tough decisions, probably before you're ready to make them. But let's continue the conversation coming up next. Want to get your thoughts on it. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Plus, Will Levis, probably, more than likely, I think we would agree, gets the start on
Sunday.
He'll
be the primary quarterback.
The primary quarterback in this brilliant two-quarterback system that apparently Mike Vrabel's cooking up, which should be, you know, brilliant. What do we want to see from Will Levis? What do we need to see from Will Levis? And are we grading him on a curve? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
I know Coach Vrabel was saying the other day that maybe, you know, I guess one possibility would be kind of a rotation if it comes to that of the younger guys. What are maybe, you know, pros and cons, if it does come to that, what are maybe pros and cons of such a system like that?
Yeah, if it comes to that, you know, the pros are obviously, you know, getting two guys on the field that can help us win. Really, in whatever way that we're going to ask them to, you know, maybe it'll be similar, maybe it'll be different, but I think it'll help take some stress off of both of them to where they're not out there every single play if that ends up being the case. And it allows us to give us an opportunity to, again, take advantage of some different matchups and things along those lines.
All right, there you go. That was Tim Kelly. Let's go around the room. He's talking about the two quarterbacks. Joe asked Mike Vrabel about the two quarterbacks a couple days ago, and that's when Mike Vrabel told him he looked ridiculous with his hands. He said, I don't know, we might alternate every series. We might alternate every other series.
Like, you look ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
That would go down forever, the best.
Between his hands and Sciatica. Those are both in the Joe Rex Road
Hall. Oh, my goodness. Boy, oh, boy.
But they've talked about using both quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Let's go around the room. Do we really think that the Titans are planning on using a true two-quarterback system?
I hope not. I think they will try to use both guys, but they will lean more so heavy on Levis. Mm-hmm. And then use Willis in some type of, you know, have him a package for himself to come in the game. Because my thing is, what if Levis goes out there and he's in a rhythm? He's going and he's feeling good. Why would you pull him out? For anything.
Right.
Even if it's a, okay, we're down in the red zone, or yeah, we're inside the 20 red zone, gold zone, whatever you want to call it. Oh, let's put Willis in. Let's put Willis in because we no. If your guy's going and he has that rhythm and everything, he seems like he's settling in. Leave him in the game. There's no need to pull him out just because you want to get the other guy on the field to give him some reps. So, I don't think they will go with the true. I would be surprised, really, if they go with this true sort of quarterback deal that we've seen so many colleges do. We've seen Nick Saban do it recently. See how that worked out for him.
Even in college football, it doesn't work.
Exactly. It doesn't work. So I hope they don't go with the true, you know, two quarterback, you know, sort of model.
I don't know what they're going to do, but I agree with you guys. I just don't envision, based on all of the football that I've watched, and I've never coached, I've never decided in a room, hey, I think we should play two guys or anything, but every time I've watched it happen, it's at best a short-term thing. Mm-hmm. At best. And I can't think of too many times where I was like, man, that two quarterback system, that is working for X team. It usually doesn't, more often than not. So but I would ask the question, why?
Yeah.
What I guess if you're starting Levis, mm-hmm, and he really struggles,
then yeah,
then okay, then let's pull it back for a little bit. Let's mm-hmm use Willis. But I think it's just time to see what you got in Levis and let him sink or swim. Let him make some mistakes. I just think that in the long term they're better off.
Yeah, and it's not just. And I know Vrabel knows this, and Charles London and Tim Kelly, they know this. It's not just the quarterback. It's the guys that he's playing with, too. They get used, you know, you get in this rhythm with one quarterback, the offensive line, the, you know, the cadence, everything. You get used to this one quarterback in the game, the receivers, everybody. And then all of a sudden you make a switch to the other quarterback. So it's, you keep on, you're not just messing with the quarterback, you're messing with everybody else.
That's a good point.
So my thing is, if it's working, hell, if it's not a disaster, just leave Levis in the game. Because if, again, if you take put him in a game and say he throws an interception, which I think he will, he throws an interception. You pull him out the game. How's that helping him?
It's not.
It's not helping.
It's actually, him. Let him work
through
confidence.
Exactly. Let him work through it, mm-hmm, and keep it going. Again, unless it's a disaster where nothing's looking good, then you lead a kid in.
I'm going to give this Titans coaching staff, the BOD, the benefit of the doubt, and say that they're smarter than that, than to do a preseason style, mm-hmm, alternating series, alternating quarters. I don't think they're completely lying. Like, they'll probably have some packages drawn up for Malik Willis, mm-hmm, whether it's red zone packages, fourth and one situations where they're going to run it with Malik, something like that, where we might see him in packages, but not like a, okay, first quarter is Will, second quarter is Malik, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm.
But it's not as if Levis isn't a mobile guy,
exactly,
that can't run a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. So like these packages that we're thinking, has Malik Willis shown he's great in the red zone somehow? I don't know. Like I'll have to see it, right? I got to reserve. I can't tell you what it's going to be like because they haven't done this before. So maybe it's going to be a brilliant game plan where both guys roll out there and it works great. I don't see it. Like, I'm wondering.
I would give the odds of that 1 in 2 billion.
Yeah. How many teams have you seen go with this two quarterback system during the season? Now, New Orleans do it, but they do it all the time with their quarterback because, you know, their backup quarterback, he's the fullback, the running back, the receiver. He's
Taysom
everything.
Hill.
Yeah, Taysom Hill. He's everything. So they can do that because they're used to it. That's common. Everybody knows that Taysom Hill will be in the game some point underneath center. Titans are not used to that. So why even go that route? Because, again, like Willie said, what is it that Willis does, Malik Willis does, that is just outstanding?
Hold on to the football too long?
That may not be outstanding.
Outstanding, you know, in the opposite
way, yes. But what is it that he, you know, I think he's a suitable NFL backup in this league, but he does nothing, you know, like outstanding that you got to say, oh, we got to get him on the field. Like in this package, he needs to be on the field like a Taysom Hill. He needs to be on the field because we got an advantage when he is. Do we think that about Malik Willis?
No.
So why even go with this back and forth thing?
And so I think we're all in agreement. It's mm-hmm. Will Levis's job most likely starting,
mm-hmm.
and it will be his job, you know, granted, knock on wood.
This is job disaster. Moving forward. I said it yesterday.
There's absolutely disaster. You know, it's Will Levis's job. So what do we need to see from him?
I just need to see him improve. Listen, I know he's going to turn the ball over. I believe he's going to. If he doesn't, that's a plus. But I do, you know, he's a young guy, rookie guy. He hasn't played nothing but, what, maybe 15 snaps, if that. So I do believe he's going to turn the ball over at least one time. But I got to see him, you know, getting better each and every time going out there. I got to see him a command of the huddle. You know, when he throws that interception or when he gets sacked, how does he come back the next play? That's what I want to see from Malik Willis. If he throws for 300-400 yards, that's great. Perfect, you know. But if he doesn't, And they don't win, I'm still not looking at it as, oh, this guy's a failure. Like, they need to move on to the next. No, if he's going to do some good things out there, and he's going to do some things that make you scratch your head. But you got to understand, he's a rookie with only no more than 20 snaps in a game. You know, so you got to expect some things are going to be rookie-ish. But then again, like he did in the preseason, he showed you that with that big arm that he can fit it in places. He can throw the ball.
That's what I want to see. I don't expect 20 for 24, mm-hmm. you know, with no interceptions and 3 touchdown passes. But I want to see flashes of, that's why they drafted. That's why everybody was talking about this guy as a first-round pick, mm-hmm. and he slipped to the second round. Mm-hmm. That's the feeling I want to get. Show me a few plays like that where you're like, wow, that's a big-time throw, or that's a big-time run. Or, hey, this guy's got what you're talking about. This guy's got a little moxie. This guy's got a little bit of guts. You know, things that you can cling to and say, hey, I want to see more of that.
It's not all
going
to be good.
Even if there's mistakes. Yeah.
It's not all going to be good, but can we see a little bit of good? I mm-hmm. think would be great. Like, even going back to the preseason, there was one bad throw that Will Levis had. Mm-hmm. He just missed a receiver. I forget who it was. But the way that he stepped up in the pocket mm-hmm. and avoided pressure, that was something that, okay, mm-hmm. that's good. The throw wasn't great. But the way that you were able to, you know, use your footwork and maneuver yourself to avoid that pressure, to avoid the sack, that was good. Mm-hmm. I'll take those little tidbits. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get into your thoughts on this. But coming up next, Elliot Friedman will join us. He normally joins us on Thursdays. He was traveling yesterday, so we'll get his thoughts, what's going on with the Predators, big game tomorrow night against Toronto, and also some juicy stories across the NHL. Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast, and Sportsnet will join us coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5-106.3 The Game and The Game Nashville app. Normally, Chris Mason, C. Mace, will join us on Fridays. His segment is brought to you by Coleman Tractor in Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. But joining us today instead is Elliot Friedman of the 32 Thoughts podcast and of Sportsnet. Elliot, so glad we could catch up with you today. Wanted to get your thoughts on the Shane Pinto situation. So he's been suspended for half of the season for violating the NHL's gambling policy. We were throwing this around yesterday. It said explicitly that he had not been betting on NHL games. So we were wondering, okay, then what's the violation here? And then it came out later that there was a third party involved with the gambling. So just based off of what you know on this situation, what's been going down and what could this possibly mean for the future of the NHL and its gambling policy?
First of all, Kid, I want an apology to you and your co-hosts, and that I forgot to let you know I was traveling yesterday and all the craziness of that story. I forgot.
No apology necessary.
So I do apologize for that. Okay, so I guess the best way to explain this is go from the start. Sometime during the summer, like, Shane Pinto has a legal, and I want to stress that's L-E-A-G-A-L, legal wagering account somewhere. I assume it's in New York because that's where he's from, but I don't know that for sure. He has a legal account. And one of the things I've really learned is that there's a lot of athletes that do, and there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing illegal about it as long as you handle it properly. And so what happens is, you know, you have to, when you sign up for these, I guess you have to give your social insurance number or enough identification that they can determine who you are. And these companies watch these accounts like a hawk. And if they realize that someone is, for example, a pro athlete or somebody who can interview sporting events, they watch everything that happens. Because they don't, you know, they don't want to, they want to know if a sport is compromised, and they also don't want to be accused of being part of anything if something goes sideways gambling-wise. So Shane, they were watching Pinto's account, and, you know, like I said, he has a legal account, I believe in New York, but I don't know for sure. But what they noticed was there would be bets placed in his account while they could look at the schedule and say, well, that's weird. How could this be happening in his account if he's in Ottawa where the Senators were playing, or if the Senators say were on a road trip to Nashville? Like, how could his New York account be placing bets maybe if he's in Nashville? And they flagged it. And basically what they determined was that Pinto was sharing his account with someone else, or multiple people, I think friends of his. And so that's called proxy betting. I've learned a lot about this the last few days, and it's illegal. Like, for example, FanDuel makes it very clear in its rules, and it's easy to find, we do not allow proxy betting, and you are only to use your account, no, and not let anyone else do it. And as a matter of fact, there was a guy was betting a ton of money, but one of the other gambling sites was fined $150,000 last year because they got caught letting a guy place very big proxy bets. So it's not allowed, and it tends to be minor guys for people at this level, but technically it is against the law if you're going over state or federal lines. So he got turned into the NHL by the company. And I believe what happened was in the last 2 or 3 weeks, the Senators and the player were notified that this was pretty serious. And I think, Carolyn, the unanswered question here that we have is, you know, what were his friends betting on? And I think it's possible they were betting on things that they shouldn't have been betting on, but I don't know that for sure, so I can't say it with proof. And if that's the case, that's a real concern. Like, there certainly is a bit of a gray area here in terms of what we know, but I do know it's tied into allowing your friends to access the account and what they did when they were wagering.
Wow. story with several layers.
Elliot, I heard your discussion, too, on your podcast, the 32 Thoughts podcast this morning, too. I sit there and I ask myself, and like you're saying, you're reporting what you can report. But I think we can all kind of look at it and say, if these were just a few bets by his buddies on the Knicks or the Mets or the Yankees, I don't see 41 games. And so you do ask the question, was there some hockey in there somewhere? And you worry about that. I'm sure the league was worried about that.
Well, you know, Willie, I think it comes down to, as you know, guys, like, what do you think and what do you know, right? Mm. And there's a big difference between what I think could have happened here and what I know happened here. What I do know is this, guys. This was negotiated with the Players Association. They're not appealing it. The league, and that this 41-gamer came with the approval of the Players Association and the agreement not to appeal it. So my theory is that if the Players Association agreed to this, which is a very stiff punishment, there was something there that really concerned everybody.
Now, Elliot, with that being said, because proxy betting, yes, it's a violation, you know, and you just spelled it out, whether you're going over state lines or whatnot. But is that a rule in the NHL that, you know, if you do indeed have a, we know you can't bet on hockey, but if indeed you do have a account, you can't allow someone else to make bets on your account, even if it's not hockey, you know, related?
Well, it's not. It's a great question, Derek. It's not a rule in the NHL. This was one of the challenges. Like, I've been working on this story for probably about a week and a half, and the reason I didn't go with it was because there was a lot of uncertainty as to what. Like, this is not like a trade rumor or anything like that. If you're going to report it, you've got to be right. And there was a lot of stuff here that was really hard to figure out. Like, one of the things I asked people, Derek, was, what are the rules about gambling in the NHL? Mm-hmm. And the only thing I could find was some people sent me a memo from March of 2022, where they made it very clear that if you bet on NHL games, you're going to face massive punishment. And they sent it to all the teams, and it basically said any league employee, team employee, or player who does it, you're going to get the book thrown at you. And other than that, there's really not anything. Mm-hmm. So now there is something in the CBA. It's in Section 18A, where it gives the commissioner a latitude to suspend or punish for off-ice offenses. And that's kind of what he was able to use here. But the answer is no, Derek. There's nothing there that says you can't allow, you can't do proxy betting. Now, one thing I do think here that's going to happen is, like, look, like, athletes are like the rest of us. They gamble. Now, they shouldn't illegally gamble, and that's really a bad idea, but they all have fantasy football teams. They all do Masters pools. I'm sure they bet on games. Like, I had players and people reaching out to me yesterday and saying, I want to make sure I'm not doing what Shane Pinto did. And, like, I think that they realize they're not. I would hope not. But I do think, Derek, over the next few days, you're going to see some meetings and Zoom calls set up where the players are going to be told specifically things like, do not let anybody else use any legal account you might have. Don't do anything illegal, because if you do, even if you are not malicious, and I don't think for a second that Pinto was a malicious guy, I think he made a mistake, it's on you. And this could happen. So I think of a lot of that education, Derek, is going to be coming.
Elliot Friedman is with us. Elliot, this happened in this past offseason with the NFL. You know, last year it was revealed that Calvin Ridley was betting on NFL games. He was suspended for the season. And then there was a stretch of about a month, maybe 2 months in the spring and summer, where the floodgates were opened in the NFL, where there were several NFL players that violated the NFL gambling policy, whether it be gambling on NFL games or gambling on NFL property. And it made me think, okay, well, if the first offense came out with Calvin Ridley, did the NFL start to crack down a little bit more, look into the gambling policy and potential violations in the gambling policy a little bit more? Do you think that this could be maybe the floodgates potentially opening in the NHL, where the NHL will crack down a little bit more on gambling within the league?
Well, I think you guys are asking a lot of really good questions here. I think that the problem is, Carolyn, is that for one thing, I think the horse is really out of the barn door. And like the gambling money it's big. It's enormous. You know, leagues talk about their salary caps going up and who benefits from that. The players do too, because they can make more money. And obviously in a league like the NFL, the biggest driver are the media deals, but the gambling money is big everywhere. So I don't think we're necessarily going backwards. I looked at those NFL suspensions yesterday, and I think it's 8 players and a coach. And of those 9, 8 of them are for gambling on NFL games. Like, you've got to know better than that. Like, you can't do that. I mean, everybody should know common sense. If you're an NFL player, you shouldn't be gambling on NFL games. Now, the one that was different was the one in Tennessee with the offensive linemen. Like, that was one that I had no idea there was a rule that you couldn't place a legal wager while you were at your team facility. And that shows you, I mean, look, I think gambling is here to stay. I know a lot of people don't like it. You know, and the other thing, too, is we're the last place in the world that kind of allowed it. Like, everywhere else in the world, gambling on sports is perfectly normal and has been for a long time. So I don't think it's going anywhere. And plus, I think the athletes know that more money into the sport is good for them. I just think you have to be a lot smarter about what you do and know the rules.
We're talking with Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast. Now, Elliot, do you think after this suspension, because, you know, we only know a little, and for them to suspend it for 41 games, there must have been undertow of a lot of other things as well. Do you think any team touches him once his suspension is done?
Yes, Derek, mm-hmm. I do. Like I said, I don't think anybody here, I think if anyone here believed it was malicious, mm-hmm. the suspension would have been even worse. I think one of the things the NHL did here was send a message, use Pinto to send a message to everybody that you better know what you're doing and what people are doing in your name. So I think that, I think people understand that. But again, I think the player, the overall opinion on the player is that he didn't do anything malicious. He made a mistake, a big one, but he made a mistake and he'll serve his time. The other thing too, Derek, as you know, is, he's a good young player. He's 22, 23 years old. He's talented. And I'm sure people will talk to him, and just say, like, are you remorseful? And I've heard he definitely is remorseful. So I think as long as he shows the remorse and doesn't repeat the mistake, it'll be okay. You know, Derek, I have a question for you, because mm-hmm. I've been asking this to a lot of players I've been talking to. Like, do you think players will have an issue with him? Like, are they going to say, okay, it's gambling, we all do it, we understand, it wasn't that bad? Mm-hmm. Or do you think they're going to be like, hey, we just lost you for 41 games. Like, we're really mad at you.
No, I think players, because they understand, listen, it may not be this, but it could be something else that I'm involved in or get suspended for whatever. So I have to show some grace, you know, to this individual. And like you said, you know, if it comes out that, hey, listen, this wasn't a malicious act. He did it. Well, it was done. He didn't know. This is a good kid. All right, move on. I think if that is the sentiment, players are like, okay, you know, everything's under the rug. Let's go. You know, it happened. We move on. You basically served your time. Now you're out. You're back on the ice. Start helping us. If you can't help us, then you need to go. it's all about if you can help us or not. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Elliot, I'm very disappointed.
That's what I've heard, but I wanted to hear your opinion.
Yeah, and I'm very offended, Elliot, that you ask only Derek, the ex-NFL All-Pro, and not the ex-Medicine Hat Blue Jay, since you're over in Alberta right now for the Heritage Classic. But I was going to – this is interesting because – the team, the Predators, are heading out to Alberta next week, and they will play both the Oilers and the Flames. I cannot imagine anybody's in a real good mood in that province right now, in the north or the south.
No, as you mentioned, I'm here in Edmonton. I went to the third period of the game here last night. Both the Oilers and the Flames, who lost, the Flames to your old friends in St. Louis, were booed off the ice both at the end of the second period and the end of the game. And, you know, that's tough. As a matter of fact, I'm joking. They're playing the outdoor game here on Sunday night. I'm calling it the Cauldron of Anger because both these fans are going to show up in terrible moods, just terrible moods this weekend. You know, the Oilers, they're missing their stud, but they shouldn't be as bad as they are. I think there's real concern because the team had Stanley Cup aspirations, although I think they're going to figure it out. I think the Flames, the concern is there too, but I think it's a little bit different. They had a really disappointing year last year. They're off to a terrible start this year. You know, one player in particular, Nikita Zadorov, was a great interview because he's so blunt. He is just repeatedly, now twice, just like last time he apologized to the fans for the way they were playing. You know, you can feel the tension in Calgary. Edmonton's a good team. I think they're going to solve it. I think in Calgary, they're a little worried this could be much, much more serious. And they're going to have to make some tough decisions there because they've got some contracts they have to decide on whether or not they're going to do.
We only got about 30 seconds, but Elliot, the Maple Leafs come here tomorrow night, and they looked awfully good last night. So we always love to hit you with what's the mood in Toronto when they're struggling. But right now, it's pretty quiet because they look very strong.
They look really strong. We have a goalie controversy. You're going to see the guy who's in danger of losing the job tomorrow, Samsonov. But people are happy right now, Willie. All it will change is 1-4-2 Nashville victory to completely change that.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see what the Preds can do about that.
We'll be sure to have a temperature check next Thursday as well.
My pleasure, guys.
Awesome. Elliot, really appreciate you taking time for us today. We'll chat next week.
Thanks for being flexible, Carolyn. Take care.
Yeah, you as well. Thank you, Elliot. Elliot Friedman, he is the very best. He has a full breakdown on Sportsnet.com of the Shane Pinto situation, and I'm really intrigued to see, and nobody has the answer to it, what comes of this for his situation.
Yeah, what becomes public about what was going on? Because, look, we put two and two together here.
Yeah.
There was some hockey in there.
Yes.
Come on.
You don't get suspended for 41 games of the season if you're just betting on
cornhole.
Lacrosse. Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. Maybe they had the wager on your team in the Pro-Am or
absolutely.
Whatever, when you went up there.
Hopefully they ain't bet on me because I lost.
All right, coming up next, D-Mace borrowed Jared's film room for the night, and he watched the Atlanta tape. His breakdown takeaways from the Atlanta Falcons. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace. Make your silly underdog picks legally for your chance to win weekly prizes. You can play at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app as we approach week 9 of college football and week 8 of the NFL. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.